and welcome. And boy, do we got a show for you tonight. I've done over 50 shows, and this is probably one of the greatest stories of how someone fell into the casino business. Because I haven't heard a story where someone decided when they were younger that they were, you know, going to go into the casino business. Usually people fall into it, and the stories are so interesting. But this is a good one. I'm really glad that we have a great guest tonight, and welcome Brian DeLugo. How are you?
Good. Good evening, Tino, and thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, great. Great to have you. So you grew up in St. Thomas in the Caribbean, which, as far as I'm concerned, is probably about one of the closest places you can get to paradise. Mm-hmm. Tell us what that was like, because that's a very unique place to grow up.
Yeah, you know, it truly was paradise. You know, we'd often go to the beach, you know, before school, after school. You know, it has the whitest sands, you know, the bluest waters, 85 degrees all year round. And I wouldn't trade it for the world. It was a great place to grow up. And, you know, when I was there, I learned, you know, a lot of valuable lessons that I probably couldn't have gotten anywhere else. That kind of formed who I am, you know, today, and some of my, you know, what makes me me.
So your dad was very influential in you, right? With what he did.
Yeah. Actually, yes. One, you know, some of the lessons that that he taught me at an early age is, you know, when we go to the beach. My parents would hand myself and my siblings, we'd get a trash bag each, and they'd have us, you know, walk up and down the beach, and we had to pick up all the trash before we could go play on the beach, which just drove me crazy at the time, because I never understood why did we have to pick up somebody else's trash. But, you know, my dad would always say that, you know, since he was raised there and he remembered it being pristine and beautiful, that, you know, you always got to leave the place better than you found it. And that's what I've always tried to do. Every business that I've ever worked at, I always try to leave it better than it was when I got there. And you know, he was in the Air Force for, I think he was retired after 25 years, and he was extremely, you know, organized and structured. And before we take a trip anywhere, I remember we'd get in the car, and again, it would drive me crazy then, where he'd have a checklist for everything. You know, he'd check the air in the tires, the oil, the whatever, the air filter, the battery cables, before we could go anywhere. And so he was just so, you know, just structured like that. And now all these years later, I guess like through osmosis or whatever, I just kind of rubbed off on me. And so now, you know, I'm very detail-oriented and structured and, you know, very linear thinking. And I think, you know, a lot of that was from my upbringing, from my dad.
Yeah, and you need a lot of those skills to do some of the stuff you do, right, in your work and in your everyday life.
Yeah, absolutely, because it's got to, you know, we have to have a plan, and he also always had a contingency plan, so that kind of has rubbed off on me as well, because things never go always according to plan. But, you know, if you don't know where you're going, then you're never going to get where it is you're trying to get to. So, and I'm just a list maker, that's how I keep track of time, is how much I can, you know, check off of my list and determine, you know, I guess a self-evaluation if I did everything I wanted to do today or not. But I'm still have to have a plan and have to have a list.
Yeah, of course, and it's those attention to details that makes all the difference when you're doing something that has a lot of moving parts, like the casino business.
Absolutely, and it's there is, like you said, there are so many moving parts, so many variables, and there's got to, you know, you've got to be organized, and or things are going to fall through the cracks, and so it's so, you know, important, I think, that, and not everybody's like that, and some people do fine without that, but that where maybe they're a little more creative and it's just and not as structured. But for me, it would just fall apart if I didn't have my list and a direction.
Yeah. Now you left the island and you went to study computer engineering, right?
Yeah, I started out as a computer science major and then computer engineering at Arizona State. And then after a couple of years, I transferred to UNLV in Las Vegas.
How did you find those years, you know, in comparison to your island life, so to speak? How was that transition,
well,
and how did you find the whole computer science thing at that time?
Well, it's 180 degrees out of phase from where I started. You know, left a beach environment, 85 degrees, to one season all year round to the desert. Where there's no water and still no seasons, I guess. But what was similar and where I was attracted was again the computer science or the programming, where it's structured language and there's rules, and it's very structured. So that was a very good, again, I guess that would be like the next phase of my upbringing that kind of helped mold me to what I am today and helped me in my career. Also, that structure and solving the unknown and plugging in different variables, which has helped me a lot throughout my career.
Yeah, so you kind of went into an area where you used your foundation growing up that you could also apply to the modern era, which was the computer engineering, and you fit right into that, right?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's
and
great.
So, and it was right at the time where the computers were exploding, and so it was just, I got very lucky and perfect timing.
So tell us the story, because it's a great story. You had a girlfriend whose family was in the bail bonds business, and while you were at UNLV in Vegas, you ended up in downtown Las Vegas. So I'll let you tell the story from there.
Oh, yeah, that is true. My girlfriend then, she's my wife today. We've been married. In fact, today's our...
No, that's great. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. 25 years. Thank you. So what happened was we met our UNLV, and I had absolutely no desire to work in the casino business. I'm more of an outdoors hiking, climbing, swimming person, and to me the casinos were always very loud and noisy and smoky. And my girlfriend then, her parents owned a bail bond business downtown Las Vegas. And her job was to go across the street and bail people out of jail and take them back to the office, which was, and she worked on swing shifts. It was a dark office downtown Las Vegas, so it was directly across from the county jail and about catty corner to the Golden Nugget. So we would go over in the evening to the Golden Nugget and have dinner. And we never gambled and didn't know anything about the casino business or video poker or whatever. And one night we decided we would go over there and play a roll of quarters, a $10 roll. I remember I put $8 in, didn't win anything. I was so mad at myself for potentially losing $10 that I hit max bet. And I had three hearts and two spades. I threw away the spades. Two more hearts came up. And I thought that if you held all the same color and you'd win something. And I ended up hitting a royal flush for $15,000. And so not a great strategy, but it turned out to be a great outcome.
So there you were. You'd never played video poker before. You didn't have any desire to play. You hit a $15,000 jackpot. Then what happened?
Yep. And then so at 2 o'clock in the morning, downtown Las Vegas, the slot attendant or a slot tech came over to verify the machine to make sure I wasn't cheating. And right then, the slot attendant came over to pay me, and they asked me to come to the back of the cage so that they could pay me the $15,000. And I had seen every casino and Godfather movie, and there was no way I was going back to that cage because I knew they'd pull out a hammer and beat my hand. True story. And
that's great.
So,
I love it.
Yeah,
that
was
hilarious.
My introduction.
That is so funny.
To the casino
business. There was something that the slot tech told you though when he came to do his stuff, right? That really ticked you off and kind of steered you in the casino direction. What did he say to you?
Yeah, actually, Yep, a life-changing moment, definitely a career-changing moment when the slot tech came over and asked me, just making small talk, said, hey, what do you do? And I said, I just recently graduated from UNLV. And I remember he made a comment, and he said, oh, you're a college boy. You can't do real man's work like I do and get my hands dirty. And I'll never forget that pissed me off so much that there's somebody who just told me that there's something that I can't do, a total stranger, and he doesn't even know anything about me. So I thought about it all night, and then next morning I went and enrolled in the slot tech school to show this stranger that I don't even know that I can do what he said I couldn't do, and ended up getting hired a few weeks later with Station Casinos at Palo Station.
Wow. And that was back in the day when Stations just had the one casino, right?
Oh, yeah. Yep. 25 plus years ago, that was all they had was Palo Station. That was it.
So tell us what that kind of built your foundation, because you spent 11 years there. Tell us what you did there, how many casinos you opened, and everything that you absorbed during those 11 years.
Yeah, well, it was really an awesome experience, because I now have in a field that I really don't know much or anything about, other than the little bit of training I had for the to work on the slot machines. But I really, really enjoyed it, you know, programming the machines. So I had upward mobility. I advanced up the org chart pretty quick there. Like I said, when I started, we only had one property. 11 years later, I think it was 18. I was part of the opening team for many of those properties. And one thing I learned, again, and as I go on through my career, we are all just basically what a collection of life experiences. And, you know, what I learned there real quick was, you know, how to you work with, you know, a multitude of nationalities, skill sets, management styles, and we always ran very lean. So we had, you know, very tight deadlines, and you had to work as a team to meet those deadlines, because if you didn't, you weren't going to, and you were going to fail. So it was really a great experience and also not to mention working very closely with a lot of departments, like you know, like table games or marketing and the cage and that type of stuff. So it gave me exposure to a lot of really good people and the departments, how they interact with each other that I didn't know otherwise. And then having a computer science background, that sure helped with, you know, all of the reports and everything that needed to be done, because I already knew how to code. So and it was in the infancy for a lot of people. So that was it really, again, that was the next level of learning and molding into what I am today.
Now, you not only were there, but you also were involved in opening the 18 casinos, which they ended up owning, right?
Yeah, yeah, many of those. In fact, I went out to Casino St. Charles, even in St. Charles, Missouri. We had there was also acquisitions of a lot of property, so we'd go in there and kind of convert it over to the new culture, the new way of doing things with all the P&Ps and SOPs and that type of stuff. So over the years I was able to again work with a lot of really amazing people, amazing teams, and really get exposed to a lot of the casino business that I probably, a property that's growing at the rate that Stations did. It was just, again, you get exposed to so many parts of that business that were just amazing.
So you won a jackpot, decided to get into the casino business, landed a job at a company that was growing really rapidly when they only had one casino, helped them open, you know, over 15 casinos. And when you left, what was the two or three takeaways from that experience, the major ones?
Yeah, so there was you know, the upward mobility. So I started as a slot tech, project coordinator, director, and so really, you know, the takeaways I really started to learn how to motivate the team, and which involved working closely with the team, you know, treating people like you want to be treated, and just working, with so many different, again, skill sets, educational backgrounds, and how to communicate with people to get things done, which often meant understanding their style and then what motivates them, but most importantly was the teamwork, how much more can get done, and if you work as a team and if you try to be a solo superstar and get out there and try to do it yourself, you're not going to be very successful very long.
Yeah, it all boils down to people at the end of the day, right? How you treat them and how
Absolutely.
you move on in life. Yeah. Tell us a little bit how Thunder Valley came about, because that to you was kind of like a turning point. How did that all materialize?
Yeah, that was a great experience as well. At the time, Stations had the management contract for that property, and so I was one of, I think, four people that came out to open that property. But there was a lot of challenges there that we hadn't experienced anywhere else. The first being, I mean, just the sheer volume of customers and revenues that I had never seen anywhere else, where we literally, when we opened, we had people, standing, 8-10 deep for the opportunity to play a slot machine. I mean, there was just all this pent-up demand and not a lot of capacity in the market. The other thing that was different that really, again, helped me mature in the business was the fact that there was little or no skilled, there's a shortage of skilled labor or trades, where in Vegas we always had, you open a new casino, you've got 18 to pull from, you could call and say, "Hey, I need 100 slot techs to come help." Well, in California, there was no slot techs, there was no schools, so we had to create our own slot tech school, we had to create our own dealer schools. So again, it makes go, when you have to teach, it makes you learn. So we had to go and go back to the fundamentals and to teach a group of people a skill that they didn't have because there was nowhere to pull from. Where in Vegas, you have second, third generations of people who've worked in the casino business. They're very easy to find skilled talent, but it wasn't like that in California. And then the other thing that really helped me kind of develop was, once I guess, kind of mastered my craft, it gave me the opportunity on the slot side. Thunder Valley gave me the opportunity to spend a lot of time, with the marketing, advertising, promotions, player development, F&B teams, to better, ask a lot of questions, watch what they do, and then to try to understand better how all those pieces fit together to form the whole. And so that was, again, another evolution, I guess, in my career was when I was able to be exposed to more departments more intimately.
Yeah, you were getting the experience refined even more another step by being able to interact with all those departments, right?
Absolutely.
What happened after that?
So after Thunder Valley, another awesome opportunity became available at Red Hawk Casino, where I was able to join the team there as the VP of slot operations. And after a short time, then I had table games, slots, table games, poker, and bingo. And so again, I got exposed to some more of the business and had to kind of learn quickly by, again, asking a lot of questions and learning a lot from a lot of really good people on the gaming side. And so I did that for, oh gosh, I guess about a year and a half, almost 2 years. And then the GM position came available, and I was very, very fortunate to get that about 7 years ago.
And that transition that you made from managing certain games to the GM, what did you find was the major difference, and how did you adapt to that?
Yeah, you know, in a lot of ways it's the same, but it's scaled up. So before I would have, you know, 2 to 3 direct reports, and now we went to 8. And the hardest part, I'd say, you know, initially was really forcing myself not to get buried in the details, because you have to be in the details as a department level. But then as a GM, it would not work. And so I had to, you know, again, the fundamentals are still the same. You know, you need good communication with your team. But the transition from the department head to running the casino is really, you know, setting clear direction, establishing goals, you know, meet with the team frequently. And really, I think the most important lesson, you know, that I learned was to get out of the way, you know, really just let the experts do their job.
Yeah, and just build a great team and get them to do what you needed them to do, right?
Yeah, and during that transition, within, I guess it was probably in the first year, I think it was, maybe 2 years that I was doing the GM position, I went and enrolled at Sac State to get my MBA. And, you know, they emphasize in that program, it's, you know, a lot of emphasis on, you know, replacing the command and control structure of the organization with more of like a decentralized one. And that, you know, we're still, it's still a work in progress and still developing, but that has really, you know, paid huge dividends, you know, on both my personal productivity, but really on the finances of the operation, and really also my work-life balance, because that, you know, allowing, you know, the department heads to manage their department and just meet with them and talk about, you know, what are the goals, and you know, did we meet them, did we not, and really kind of, you know, do the strategic plan and direction, but then allow them to do their job and really do the tactical part and implement the plan. And so I guess that's the big difference between the departmental, running a department and running a property.
How does one transition from, you know, some of the things that you were doing in the beginning, you know, running a department, running two departments, to actually becoming a GM? How do people make that transition?
Right, well, I think really it's I think the hardest thing is because you're you know, like a subject matter expert in your area, that department, and now you're not necessarily going to be an expert in all of the departments. And that's a hard thing to wrap your brain around when you're in charge or you're responsible. And so the easiest way, I guess, to transition is to understand that is that you don't have to be an expert in everything. You got people who are. You just have to ask a lot of questions, and the question usually is, you know, if whatever we're doing, how is that fit into the plan and the goal, and if whatever that goal is, if it's, you know, improve customer service or improve revenue or improve margins or reduce expenses, is this answering that question? Is this going to do that? So really, I think the best way is to just understand that you're not going to be an expert in every area, and you don't have to be, but you have to stay involved, and you have to ask a lot of questions. And that was, for me, was the hardest thing is because I again am so driven and just focused that I want to be the best at everything, and that's not a realistic goal. But it's just asking a lot of questions and learning something every day.
Yeah. You never stop learning, do you?
No. Yeah, you're right.
And you're a pretty avid reader, too, right?
Yeah, right now I read on average about 2 to 3 books a month, have for years. And that's one thing that's really, I think, helped the team as well, is that what I've done is when I find a book that I really enjoy, I buy it for all of the VPs and give it to them. And then we meet weekly, and they kind of as a group, and they tell me, hey, this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to apply these principles to the department, and how we're going to, you know, whatever the goal is, and how we're going to make it better. And so they're also learning every day, and reading a lot of really, really good business books as well. So that's been kind of a byproduct of the MBA program, that I got so used to reading so many books that I really enjoy it, and there's a lot of nuggets in them, and that we can apply to the business. And now I pass that on to my direct reports, who then in turn pass it on to theirs.
That's pretty unique. I've never heard that anybody say that on all the shows that we've done. That's really cool. Brian, you know what's going on in California and what's going on all over the country. Competition on business is rising. Expansions, new casinos, new pools, new clubs, new restaurants. What's going on? In 3 to 5 years, what's going to happen here? I mean, are we going to be saturated? You know what? Tell me a little bit about your thoughts on that.
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. And what we've seen over the last I've been in California now for 15 years, and it's just been this huge explosion in new competition coming online, expansions with the current properties that are out there, continually, you know, upping their game, going from what would be like the traditional bingo type of sprung structure to these mega resorts that rival a lot of what Vegas have to offer. And I don't think we're going backwards. I think, you know, going forward in the next 3 to 5 years, I think we're going to continue. Hey, we're seeing it right now just in our area. I think I've got 4 new casinos coming online here in the next 1 to 3 years. We've got card rooms that are popping up constantly. So I think the we're going to continue to see the expansion, provided, you know, that the interest rates don't go up too much, and for us the gas prices, as you know, as long as those kind of level off, that helps us as well. But I think, you know, I think at some point it will get saturated. The one nice thing that we kind of have had, unlike I guess like in Las Vegas, where your competitor is across the street, ours are 30 miles away, 60 miles away, but it's still very,
right,
very competitive, and we still have budgets,
right,
and we still have to make, you know, increased numbers every year. So it's still a challenge and still hard.
Do you think that we'll get to a point where it's really going to affect the business? Because we still have that silver lining, like you said, that you can't open a casino across the street. You know,
yeah, and
is that going to change in the future? Is it going to become like, you know, Walmart coming in and gobbling up all the mom and pop shops, and we're going to see more consolidation? What's going to happen?
Yeah, the other, I guess, kind of the nice thing about in the tribal space is that we don't have any like the M&A acquisitions like you would find in the commercial, because they're all separate,
yeah,
tribes. So that's why we're good there. But there's more tribes opening more casinos. So you know, I think some of the uncertainty and the unknowns in the you know, 3 to 5 years out is what's gaming going to look like then. You know, is it another casino opening down the road? Is that my competition, or is it online? Is it
right,
you know, people,
right,
logging
good point
in and
good point,
yeah,
you don't know where it's coming
and
from. It's yeah,
yeah, yeah. So that's what I guess keeps us up awake at night, is trying to,
yeah,
you know, all of us trying to figure out where is that, where are we going, and what's that look like, and then,
yeah,
our demographic, you know, is you know, 66, 67 plus, and now you got the millennials or whatever who are not necessarily, you know, excited about playing a old fashioned stepper reel or video poker, and so what does that mean to the bricks and mortar? And so there's a lot of unknowns.
Yeah, keep you on your toes, and like you said,
Yeah.
sometimes you get some sleepless nights thinking about the future. Hey, this has been
Yep.
great. Let's take some calls. Let's do that right now.
Sure.
Hang on a sec. Let's bring on the first call here. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Brian?
Hey, Kino. This is Linda Gordon with SDA Gaming. Hi, Brian.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good.
Hey,
How are
Linda,
you?
how are you?
I'm
Nice,
good.
nice.
I'm good. I'm
Good. I'm
enjoying this
glad
a
you
lot.
called in.
Journey.
Good.
Yeah. This is great.
Did you love that? Didn't you love
Congratulations.
that story about how he got into the casino business?
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I knew when he won $15,000, he was doomed.
Yep.
Tell you
Never
what,
had a chance.
if I would have won 15 grand like that, I would have been doomed too.
It's just the way it works.
Man, it's so funny. That's just the way it works. Yeah, don't we know that too well? Oh my God.
So, Brian, congratulations on your anniversary.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. I just have a couple of questions with regard to you have had tremendous success there. Have you been voted best casino for 7 years in a row? Is that correct?
Eight years
Eight?
now. Yeah.
8 years in a row. I guess I have a question with regard to how your teamwork and team building management style goes. Do you feel that it contributes to the success of your casino with regard to allowing the staff to run their own departments and being able, this is very interesting to me because I'm a very detailed person and I want to be a subject matter expert on everything, but you can't, as you mentioned. So do you feel that this management style has helped you and helped the staff and be able to make a success of your casino and guests as well?
Absolutely. There's that old saying with the you've got to take care of your customers, and the customer's always right, and that's mostly true. But I think the employees are equally important in the success of the operation, if not more so, because if they don't feel like there's ownership and that they're not treating the customers right, then there's no customers, and then there is no business. And I have a story that I share with our new hires twice a month. And which kind of, I guess, emphasizes where we were and where we are. And, just briefly, what happened, a few years ago, we have a stage bar on the main casino floor that wasn't the best design. And we, myself, and some of the executives felt that we could definitely make it better with all of our knowledge and expertise. And surely we can do a better job. So I met with the VP of facilities and the architects, and we went through and decided how this bar could be so much better. And we tore the old one down, we built it. And the day that we did the river cutting, I went up there, and the first person I saw was the bar back, and I said, "Hey, what do you think of this beautiful bar that we just built?" And they said, "Oh, yeah, it's beautiful, but the cart that I bring the beverages to is too wide, and you made this too narrow, so now I have to take it off this cart and repalletize it and put it on a smaller cart. But if you had built that, it probably would have been nicer, but actually, it's not functional." I said, "Oh, wow." So we talked to the beverage server. "What do you think?" And I said, "Well, it's nice, but when we stand here, we could have been over there or whatever." And so it was very clear that it wasn't functional for them either. So I asked the bartender, "Well, what do you think of this beautiful bar?" And they said, "Well, where you put the sink here, we have to wash our glasses, but the glasses are at the other side of the bar, and then these bottles are here." And they just tore it
Oh
apart.
my
And
gosh.
so we learned a very valuable lesson with that. We never asked the stakeholders, that actually have to use it, what they wanted. And so we shut it down, tore it back down to the studs, and invited the bartenders, the bar backs, the beverage servers, and some of the EVS team. And we formed a committee and said, if you were going to build it, what would make it perfect? And we did it. They had
There
a
you go.
chip in it. And everything we do now, we do it that way. And it has, again, it's been huge. But they've
Wow.
got to be part of the solution, or it's not going to be, it's going to be substandard.
Yeah, I agree. That's a great story. Thanks for sharing that.
Absolutely.
I just had one other question, if you don't mind. I noticed that you're very heavily involved in community outreach, sponsorship, giving.
Yes.
Yeah. No, that's okay. It's fairly substantial, and it's I guess that commitment to your community and to the people who live there and the people who visit you and the staff that work for you, I think that has a great deal to do with your success. I could be wrong, but I don't think so. I think this
you
is,
know the tribe is very very giving, and it's just an honor to work for them, and they really do care. I mean, they're members of the community as well. Their kids go to the same schools, and they shop at the same grocery stores, and they realize that the community comes and patronizes the casino. So it's important to them to make sure that we give back to the community. But it's very important to the team members as well. We have one team member just recently whose brother was recently disabled, and his house, he couldn't, he needed a ramp built for, so he could, his wheelchair could get up in, to the house because they had stairs. And one of the team members happened to be just mentioning that story in front of some other team members, and the whole facilities department just volunteered. So we'll be there this weekend, and we'll build a ramp, and we'll make sure that, you know, your brother gets home. And it's just that's just how they are. I mean, it's like a big family that they look out for each other, and it doesn't happen overnight, and it's a lot of work, but it's really it's from the bottom up. It's not from the top down.
Yeah, and I think you know, Brian, I think, and Linda, you probably know about this too. The best lessons you learn are the ones that you pay for. So when you have to build something and then you have to tear it out again, you bet you're not going to make those same mistakes again, because that costs you a lot of money. You know, I mean, those are lessons that the ones that sing are the ones that you remember, you know. So, yeah, that's definitely a great way to. But, yeah, so, yeah, I guess, Linda, I guess the collaborative is in any area in your world, too, right? I mean, it's just
right.
Not in a casino, right?
No.
It's
yeah,
the same
you can't
thing
be
with
the rock work, right.
Yeah, you can't be, you have to have a great team around you. And no question.
And everybody has their own skill set, and everybody's good at some things, and we're all not, you know, we're all not good at everything. So,
yeah.
You know, it doesn't work.
Yeah,
well, thanks so much for, thanks so much for calling in. Really appreciate it. Did you have another question?
No, I think I'm good, and thank you, Brian, very much.
Are you sure?
You know, it's a pleasure. Yeah, I think so. I think I'm good.
Okay.
I congratulate you again,
okay.
And you both. This has been wonderful. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Thanks for calling in.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. I have Brian DeLugo on the line. Do you have a question for him?
Hey, Tino. This is Jacques Romero.
Jack, how are you, my friend?
Great. Hey, great.
Good. Great. I'm glad you're calling in.
Hey, Brian, great talk. I couldn't agree with you more about getting the buy-in on the frontline associates. You know, it's easy to, you know, have a really nice conceptual drawing and get it all nice and pretty, but it's not functional, and you haven't got the buy-in from the people who's you know, who need to utilize it, and then you can, you know, impact their morale, which you're always trying to motivate. You know, you can decrease their morale without even intending to, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think, Tino, and you spoke to it some great stories in there. Do you, other than what a lot of challenges you've already overcome, what do you see facing either your property or California Indian Gaming in general, the next challenges that you're looking at, or maybe just the industry in general?
Yeah, I think the for us, the biggest unknown or uncertainty is where is the industry going to go With the, you know, you have online poker, and then now soon, not in California today, but very soon, and probably next year or two, would be the sports betting. And again, that it may or may not be an exclusive to tribal gaming. So there's a lot of, though again, if somebody can do this without physically coming into the bricks and mortar building, that's a concern unless we're participating in the online version of the entertainment. So that's probably further out, but that's long term a very real concern. What is that next group of gamers? What's going to appeal to them? What does that look like? And is it still the casino? Do they still want to come in here? So that's, you know, a challenge. And then for us in the near future, we currently our goal for the last 7 years or so was to delever and pay down debt and be debt free. Thought that was the best long term solution for the tribe, to put them in a position as new competition comes on that they're not burdened with a lot of debt, even though it's inexpensive money. It's getting more expensive, but I figured if we had the cash in the bank, it will be able to weather some of those storms in the near future. So we're very close right now to being 100% debt free, and we'll just really kind of keep our finger on the pulse of where everything's going. But we are very positioned to weather probably any foreseeable storm in the near future.
Well, that's a great position to be in. Congratulations. And it also allows you the opportunity to pursue, those opportunities that may arise in the future.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a good way, good positioning, right? Very good positioning. Great. Jock, did you have any more questions?
No, thank you. Great call, guys.
Jock, thank
really
you so
appreciate
much.
You. Really appreciate you calling in. Thank you.
Yeah, very interesting.
Okay.
Thank you.
You got it. Thanks. Have a good night. Okay, great. Let's take the next caller here. See what we got. Okay. Hello, this is GT Radio. We have Brian DeLugo on the line. Do you have a question for him?
Oh, good evening, Brian. Good evening, Tino. How are you guys doing?
Good evening.
Good,
great.
Good.
Thank you.
This is Mike.
This is Michael from Catalyst Marketing down in Fresno.
Oh, great.
Hey, Mike. Down the road from you, Brian. Yeah. Great stores. I've been around the industry for a little over 20 years, so it's always some funny stuff. I got the opportunity to open up a casino in Belize and trade some kids off a banana packing cart to be cage cashiers. So I certainly understand some of the some of the back, including, I was down there for about almost 3 years, and the what my ace to joke about and post on Facebook, my commute was a 200-yard walk down the beach.
That's amazing.
Certainly can relate to the time in St. Thomas, so it's great. I understand you have mostly slot operations background, before stepping into the GM role. What in specifically from a marketing standpoint, how was the transition to understanding some of the principles and some of the things that you had for your VP marketing or director marketing underneath you, and kind of understanding the trials and tribulations that they go through on a daily basis?
Yeah, well, I've been really fortunate to be, surrounded by a very good team. I guess from the gaming background, it's a lot of trial also. We don't know what is going to be, we can guess at what will be a great slot machine or a great table game, and we look at the math and you compare it to a what's worked in the past, and this one may still have the same math, but it looks a little bit different, but it should work because it's the same math, and then it doesn't. So there's a lot of that trial and error from the gaming side that I think exists on the marketing side, right, just because there's, again, a lot of uncertainty. So you do your A-B testing. You don't know necessarily what's going to work, but you build your model and you make your best guess, and then you we always have the control group, and then we test on a portion of it, but it's always trying to improve, I guess, just get better at what we do, and sometimes we get it right, often we get it wrong, and again, I guess the scariest thing for me is when you get it right, but you got it right for not the reasons that you thought. It just
I was right.
and so that's again, I guess, is fun, but it's also part of that learning thing is not to already know what the answer is or look at the data, and sometimes it tells you something, and sometimes it doesn't because your brain won't let it. I have a very good marketing person who's been in the business for longer than I have, and has really taught me a lot. We spend a lot of time together and go over a lot of stuff. And one thing that I think people might find surprising maybe is that I actually I spend a lot more my learning time often in outside of the industry because we are often very fortunate to have extremely good margins. But I like to look at other industries and see what they do, like grocery stores, for instance, who they don't have that luxury of having really strong margins. So they have to be better and they have to be more efficient. And so sometimes we try to incorporate things from other industries than what we've seen done in our own, if that makes any sense.
It actually makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. I think I'm going to flow through your way a couple of weeks, so I might give you a ring and stop in and say hi.
Oh, please do. Absolutely.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks
you.
For taking the call.
I'd love to give you the nickel tour.
Great.
Great, thank you. All right, thank you so much. So, Brian, you brought an interesting point up because a lot of people don't know this, but Wayne McCormick, who was the GM of Chickasaw, the property up in Thackerville, he came from the grocery business. He was in the grocery business for 32 years. And he'd never been in the casino business, and he fell into it, and he was hugely successful as a GM, hugely successful, because he brought that same mentality from the grocery business into the casino business. So
yeah, absolutely.
That's,
and it's funny when one of my when I had a position available here, and we had a lot of very good candidates, but they were all very, all had a lot of experience. And they all, were very, very experts in their area. But the one I ended up going with was the one that came from a property that had no money and no budget. Because I know, it's sometimes it's easy to make things happen if you have an unlimited, blank check. But it's a lot harder when you have no money at all and you have to make something happen. And so that was pretty important to. I want someone that's been from a big property and been experienced and exposed to a lot of things, but sometimes that's a detriment when they have unlimited budget. I think that's a great observation that you shared there.
Yeah, and I asked the way he worked. It reminds me the way I work and the way you work. But. I asked him, he said to me, he said, he said, I work really hard. I have a suite here at the hotel, and I come down at midnight sometimes or 2 a.m. to see how everything's going and watch stuff. And he goes, a lot of my employees ask me why I work so hard. And this is what he said to me. I'll never forget this. He said, he turns to his employee and he says, because having had to shut down all the Safeway branches when they went under, I had to deliver a lot of pink slips to people that had families. And he said, I never wanted to have that feeling again. That's what he told them.
Totally relate.
That's what
kept me up at night for years was, I've got 1,400 people that are, relying on me, or at least that's the way I viewed it. But in reality, we're all a team that rely on each other. So it's easier to sleep at night now knowing that I'm not carrying them. We're working together.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Let's take the next caller. Hello, this is Tino Magnana, GT Radio. I have Brian DeLugo on the line.
Hi, Tino. It's Bobby from Las Vegas. Hi, Brian.
Bobby, how you doing?
Hey, how are
you, Bobby? Good. Listen, I wanted to say congratulations on your 8 years as voted best casino and your marriage 25 years. That's a heck of a lot to be proud of there.
Thank you, sir.
And curious as to if you have any specific moments or memories that you're most proud of in your current role or in your previous life.
Oh, gosh. For me, it really, I would say the most proud is when I've had, and it's happened frequently, where I have somebody on my team where everyone knows that they're not going to succeed, and they should be terminated, and they're just not a fit and they're not cutting it, and to work with them and take on that challenge because you see something in them that nobody else sees, or maybe they see everything else but not what's important, and working with them to develop into a productive functioning member of the team, and often it tends to be people who are critical, which that doesn't bother me, but it bothers a lot of people that if they are going to tell you that it's going to fail and here's 100 ways why it's going to fail or whatever, and that often sets a lot of people off. And for me, I like having those kind of people on the team that don't sugarcoat it and are going to give it to you straight, or at least how they see it, because they help you with a better better product. If they can tell you all the holes and if you can start plugging them, it will, again, the whole property is better, the team is better. And so for me, I really, when I look back, those are the moments where there's a lot of people now that I've worked with who people gave up on, and I didn't, because it was like a mission. I've got I see that they can be so beneficial, but there's some fringe stuff that they gotta work on. They don't have a filter or whatever, and they gotta learn how to deal with different personalities and stuff. But for me, that's what I look back, and that that's the best legacy, I guess, is when you look at people who are now have a very successful career, are able to take care of their families, and in turn are now taking care of people and helping people develop when no one else thought that they could.
Oh, that's fantastic. I think that it's amazing that you can be responsible for 1,400 folks, as you said, and still find the greatest achievement in nurturing personal growth for your team members. That's impressive.
Oh, thank you.
Is there a part of managing the people that you find the most difficult or least palatable?
I guess, and a lot of people probably wouldn't believe. Well, I guess if they knew me real well, they would. But for me, one of the challenges that I deal with frequently is I am more on the introverted spectrum, I guess. I am very, very comfortable with a spreadsheet and with very small groups. So I enjoy the one-on-one mentor type thing. But when it when the group gets larger and then I'm not as comfortable in that environment. So that's the one area that one has held me back often throughout my career, is that I knew that I would have to go do public speaking and be in a big room. And if it's a subject that I'm passionate about that I really like, I have no problem about it. But if it's something that that it's not I enjoy, but I'm not overly passionate or whatever, if the room is too big or the crowd size is too big, then it's a little more challenging for me at times. So that's the part that I like a smaller, intimate group, and as things get bigger or meetings get bigger and there's more participants, it's I don't feel it's as productive, and so I don't enjoy that one as much.
I can absolutely relate to that. It doesn't seem to have held you back too far, though.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, guys. Terrific show, as always.
Thank you so much.
Aloha, Mike Kahanui. How's it going, Brian?
How you doing, Mike?
Oh, very good. Thank you. How about yourself?
Good, thank you. Hey, you know, you talked about a lot of good points out there. You know, I just got a couple questions for you. One, I think Tino mentioned it, but you alluded to it. You know, there's always been challenges in careers and the difficult mistakes that you've made. Can you think of one that has come up in your career where you definitely learned from it and it was something that, you know, you almost look to check at each, you know, step along your career now?
That's a great, great question. A challenge where I regret? Was that the question?
Oh, not that you regret. It was like, you know, there was a mistake that happened. It was something that didn't go as anticipated, and it obviously became a learning opportunity.
Oh, well, I tell you, the second day on the job, as a slot tech, I wasn't very skilled. I just got out of school, and I was up there working on a sign, and I wanted to prove that I knew how to do it. I didn't necessarily need help, and I ended up shorting two wires together that were, line voltage 110, and I ended up catching the sign on fire. So I sure regretted that. almost burnt the casino down my first day.
It wasn't funny at the time. It wasn't funny at the time.
Yeah.
You must have been freaking out. I can just imagine.
Yeah, definitely. As the flames went up, and I didn't really know what to do. But that wasn't a good start.
second day on the job. Yeah. No.
Yeah. But I think really one of the lessons I think that I've learned, and I learn every day, is and I think we talked about it briefly, kind of the transition from being a department head to being the GM was. Believing that I need to be an expert in every area, and that caused me a lot of grief personally, because I didn't want to let the team down and let them know that I wasn't an expert in their area when I don't think any of them expected me to be, and I regret that looking back, because there was a lot of sleepless nights, and I think I ended up losing a lot of weight, trying to be an expert in everything and just, pulling my hair out. And that's a hard, I guess that's probably, everyone probably goes through that. But that's only, that's a regret, I guess, that I wish I had not put myself through that heartache and just realized that, hey, you know, just be straight with the team and tell them, this is, yeah, I don't have all the answers. Hopefully you do. I sure don't. But here's let's talk through what we want to get accomplished here, and you figure it out, and give me a plan, and if it makes sense and we both agree, then let's get it done.
Yeah, good points. Good points. You know, with your market, there's going to be some incoming competition. I think down in Elk Grove and. You know, that's just going to make the job pool that much smaller in terms of talented individuals. And you brought it up earlier in the conversation. You know, what do you look for when you can't find experience in the business? What do you look for in potential candidates for roles that you're looking to fill? And then on the second part of that, you know, how are you going to look to kind of retain some of your top end talent with the idea that, you know, competitors are going to try to come in and cherry pick, you know, those who they can from your property?
Yeah, those are both excellent questions. One thing that we do and we've done and we do is I meet with the VP, that's the next level here, I guess, and their directors that report to them, and in some cases even the managers. And years ago, we made a list of what we call the high potentials, people that we all see something in, you know, they have a very positive attitude, they have a can-do attitude, they're just they're problem solvers, and they're team players, problem solvers, and they just want to get the job done. They want to have a great attitude, and so we've identified literally hundreds of them in each department. And we meet probably quarterly and say, all right, what are we doing for these individuals to make sure that they are progressing upward? Do they need training or whatever it is? And sometimes over time, some of them will fall off the list because we see the potential, but they don't, and they don't want to, at least at this time. They want to just do what they're doing, and that's fine too. But the list, and like we go over it frequently, and we make sure that we're getting that we're communicating with the team and saying, okay, and you know, candid feedback. You know, here's your strengths that we see, and here's what we think your weaknesses are, and here's how we think, you know, together we can work on these. So we've invested a lot of time and money, but more time into internal training programs, and that's one thing. As new competition comes online, I don't. That would be the last thing that I would ever voluntarily cut the budget to, because that is so important. All the, you know, the guest service training, but all the leadership development training that we have internally as well. So that's what we do with our list, and we've identified a lot of team members who are in a zip code of where there'll be future competition, and so we make sure, you know, that we are constantly you know, frequently in communication with them. You know, are we doing everything that we can do? Or, you know, what else are we not providing you? And we have just a really a great team. And to answer your question about the job market right now is very tight and keeps getting tighter as the economy gets better, and people can they have a lot of options to work at. And in California, the minimum wage is going to go up to $15 an hour here in another 2 years, I think it is. So the job market is getting tighter and tighter. So what we look for. And it kind of takes me full circle back to, I think, what I talked about earlier about our new hire orientation, which we do twice a month. I make sure I go and talk there every time so that the new team, our current team already has heard the message, but I want to make sure that the new team hears it from the top, that this is our culture, this is how we do things, and to answer that very question for them, how do you get promoted, or, you know, how do you succeed, or and so I make sure that they know that we have a lot of, again, internal leadership development programs. We offer, if you're in IT, we offer, you know, all the certifications, and if you're in security and EMT certifications and those type of things to, again, try to retain good talent. But what I look for is, number one, is attitude. You know, if somebody has a great attitude, I don't know that you can train that. And they have to be conscious of it, and only they being the employee, can change that. But if they come in with a great attitude, we can almost train almost any skill. So the attitude is the most important thing. And the other thing that I explained to all of the new hires as well is, one thing that we look for to make it to those lists, we look for people who are team players. But when we do, like, incentives in, like, let's say food and beverage, where whoever sells the most desserts or this or that or whatever. And when we track who did it, who sold the most, we also look at see how they did it. And if, you know, we have, an individual superstar that pushed everybody out of the way to get to the top of the board, but they walk past tables that are not in their section that need drinks refilled or silverware that needs to be taken away or plates, and they walk right past their coworker station to make sure they took care of their own customers, those are not going to be the team members who are going to be future leaders or promoted. Mm-hmm. It's going to be the ones who actually look out for their team members, work as a team, and make sure that they all get on the board and that they all succeed. That's what we look for, is that quality of a person. You know, there's that old saying, it's not how much money you make, it's how you make your money. So it's that's very important in our culture here too, that everyone support each other and they work very hard to make sure that the whole team succeeds and not not an individual succeeding.
Yeah.
Hey, great
answer.
Great point.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. A good show. It was a good one. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Michael.
Brian, it's been a great show. I really appreciate you coming on. Again, congratulations for all your success, but more importantly, congratulations on 25 years of successful marriage. That's a milestone.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Tino. Appreciate it.
Good, and we'll talk very soon. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Have a good night.
Talk to you soon.
No problem.
You too.
Bye-bye. Well, great interview. Brian is like I said, it's the best story you'll ever hear about someone getting into the casino business. Win a jackpot and see how it changes your life. So November 8th, we have Bruce Howard. He's the GM over at Valley View. Now, Bruce is an amazing person, and he has some great stories, especially from Las Vegas, because he worked with the legendary Terry Lanny, who was one of his mentors at Caesars. And Terry, of course, was a legend in the business, was responsible for Caesars, was the head guy there, and then was also responsible for the Mirage and then the MGM buying the Mirage. And so you're going to hear a lot of great stories. You'll hear a lot of great wisdom, it'll be a lot of fun. Remember, everybody's got a story to tell. You just have time to listen. Have a great evening, and we'll see you November 8th. Ciao.